The Wintrust Business Lunch, sponsored by Catch 35, the perfect menu for your next business lunch. We'll visit with Brian Battle, advisor, Performance Trust Asset Management. We'll talk about what the markets are doing these days. And Matt Lavery is going to join us, the director of global sourcing, recruiting, and onboarding for UPS. You want a job? There's one for you. We'll tell you more about that a little later on. Illinois ranked 48th. Out of 50 states in the 13th edition of the Truth in Accounting Financial State of the State Report. And I presume 48th means 48th worst, not second best. Let's find out. Our guest is Christine Kuglin. Christine, this is John Williams. You're on WGN Radio. Welcome to the show.
Hi, John. Thanks for allowing me to talk to you and your listeners today.
Christine is the director of Truth in Accounting. Truthinaccounting.org is the website. First, tell us about your organization. Is it a partisan organization? Is it sort of like the GAO, or who are you all?
Oh, that's a great question. So we are a not-for-profit organization. Absolutely do our very best to be nonpartisan. That's where the word truth comes in. We just simply go through the information that is presented in the annual comprehensive financial reports of the states and cities in the United States and report it back to the taxpayers and citizens in a way that is hopefully understandable, but absolutely with the idea that we present only the facts that are presented by the governments themselves.
That Illinois ranks 48th means there's only two states in worse financial situation. This is a very bad rating for us?
Yeah, unfortunately, that is a very bad rating. It is Illinois does rank 48th, which is the same as it ranked last year. And the only states which are performing worse than Illinois at this point in time are New Jersey and Connecticut.
The governor has been saying that our bond rating has gone up, that we're paying the bills on time. The things that we can do, we're doing well. What do you make of that?
Well, I think we have to understand the way that governments report information. So when you have a balanced budget act, and you say you have a balanced budget and you're paying your bills, well, that is can be partially true. It's much like in our own lives when we set out our family's budget. It is true that we might make the minimum payments on our credit cards, on our car payment, on our mortgage. We're making those minimum payments, but yet we're not paying off our debt. And the debt is still accumulating. It is potentially even growing. So you can say you have a balanced budget and you're paying your bills, and yet your debt can be increasing and getting worse without even making
right.
a dent in it.
I understand that. And is that's what's happening in Illinois?
That's correct. That is correct.
What's the biggest mistake that Illinois government or taxpayers or whoever's responsible for this, but what's the biggest mistake we're making in Illinois regarding our state's finances?
Well, and Illinois is not unique in this, although they are performing worse at this, and that is the lack of acknowledgement is how much the unfunded pension and post-retirement benefits are dragging down the state. That is the number one burden that they are facing. Right now, Illinois, if you eliminate capital assets off your financial statements, which you can't really sell your bridges and roads, and you can take off all of the other debt associated with those capital assets, the state needs over $200 billion to pay the bills it has accumulated. And that translates to $49,500 per taxpayer. And so the biggest problem where this comes from is from the unfunded pension and post-retirement benefits due to the retirees of Illinois in the future.
And that's something that they'll happily take because a previous governor and legislature voted for, and we don't have the means to change that now. Do you have any advice for us? Shy of a constitutional amendment, and we don't seem to have the ability to pull that off. What would you suggest, or does your organization have any prescription for us?
Well, we really don't provide a lot of prescriptions because that would put us into somewhat of a partisan situation. There, you can look at what some other states are doing and what other states are requiring toward paying down that pension debt, but we try to stay out of the actual recommendations.
One last question, and then you and I need to talk more again another day. What's the biggest lie we're being told, or the biggest sort of number switcheroo? answer that as best you can.
I think that the idea that you have money left over for other purposes, or that you have the ability, that you're actually making great progress, is somewhat of a misconception when you think about the fact that your unfunded liabilities are continuing to grow. And you are really not getting any better. In fact, the only reason that Illinois looked as good as it did this year, there's really two reasons. One, the amount of federal funding that came from the different COVID acts. So the government gave Illinois, as they did all states, a tremendous amount of funding, mm-hmm. which distorted the view of the budgets. But the second thing is that the markets were up so high last year. So it made it look like there were improvements in the pension funds and other post-retirement funds, anything that investments can look like they were growing. And so if there is any kind of commentary coming out that says you are getting better, we did really great last year, things are getting better. Well, yes, but they're very transitory improvements because the federal government is not giving any kind of big amounts of money this year, and we all know what the markets are doing. I know you have someone else coming on after me to talk about the markets.
Yeah, right.
The markets are down so low that Illinois' report next year will look most likely much worse than it even did this year.
You can read more at truthinaccounting.org. Christine Kuglin is the director there. Christine, nice to talk to you today. Thanks for the heads up.
Thank you.
On the Wintrust Business Lunch, up next, Philip Weiss, president of Seyfarth at Work. Seyfarthatwork.com is his website. Philip, you're talking about the business of people using temps these days. I don't know that we talk about that category very often. Why is it on your radar?
It's on the radar, John, because we're not talking about the typical temp workers that we think about, particularly with the holiday season coming. We're seeing a recent increase in one perhaps surprising category of temporary hires, and that's temporary interim CEOs and corporate leaders. It's a trend that started really in the early 2000s, but we've seen a notable uptick in the last several months because companies that were taking a pause on either changing CEOs or considering temp CEOs during the beginning of the pandemic, they are now deciding we need to make some quick changes. They don't always have a permanent candidate in mind, so they bring in someone for 3 to 6 months, and it's a very unique solution with unique challenges.
For instance?
Well, when you think about the typical long-term CEO hire, you're talking about a months-long process to bring someone in with real strategic vision. That's what we're all familiar with. When you think about a temp at the top, a temp or interim CEO or CFO, you're thinking about issues that you need addressed immediately. You're doing it because there may have been some internal upheaval, such as someone forced out at the top for misconduct, or you've seen such a rapid market shift, John, that you have to stop the bleeding immediately without the time to find that permanent replacement. So it's a very different calculation. You need someone nimble, you need someone flexible, you need someone with immediate credibility, but they've got to hit the ground running. So it's a very different kind of formula for who you look for, and of course, the risks are higher as a result.
Where do they find this pool of people? If they're capable of doing that, why aren't they working for somebody else already?
Well, that is the kind of the $64,000 question, though that is not the kind of money these people are paid, of course. The really interesting phase of this is that, or part of this, is that there are placement firms that specifically focus on developing a cadre of interim CEOs. So there are places to go. You might even find the interim from your own ranks because they definitely know the business. But what's really also fascinating is there's a lot of people that want the interim CEO lifestyle. They don't like being committed for 20 years or 10 years. They enjoy the new challenge. The issues come up, though, because if you're bringing someone in fast, you can't always do the due diligence that's required. And we've had situations where someone was in for 3 months and a client came to us because they realized after the fact that the temporary CEO had given them such a rosy picture of the financials in a short period of time, it wasn't quite the realistic picture they were hoping for. So there's a lot of issues in terms of really great oversight that's required and great vetting as well.
Is it economical for businesses? I presume for 6 months it will cost less than it would if you had a full-time CEO.
Yeah, that is the precise calculation many companies make. Because in a way, when you bring someone for 2, 3, or 4 months, John, it's almost like a low-cost and hopefully low-risk audition. If they work out, they can become the permanent CEO. If they don't, the people that decided to bring them in have little to explain. No one takes the blame because the answer is it was temporary, it addressed some issues, and now we move on. The problems come in if you don't give the person enough authority. We had a client, for example, came to us. They own a hotel chain in the southwest of the country, and they gave their temp CEO very limited mandate. Just improve guest interactions. And then this new 2 to 3 month CEO said, really, you need to change your lobbies. You need to change your menus in the restaurants, room amenities. But his mandate or his area of authority was so prescribed, he couldn't do it. So in some cases, you want the right person. In some cases, you want to give him enough time and latitude.
I got to go, Philip, but is there a firm? This isn't your typical headhunter, then, is it? How do we sign up for this?
Well, do a search of placement firms and the word interim CEO or executive, and then ask for references. Ask for examples of what kind of challenges these people faced and how they addressed them. Because due diligence is about finding the placement firm and then finding the right person.
Philip Weiss on Temps at the Top. He is the president of Seyfarth at Work. Seyfarth at Work. Seyfarthatwork.com. Always interesting, Philip. Thank you, sir.
Thanks for having me, John.
You bet. So, but this is the week for the Fed to tell us what the new number is going to be, and maybe people aren't hanging on pins and needles about the number as the attendant commentary that goes with it. Let's talk about that a little bit with Brian Battle. He's an advisor with the Performance Trust Asset Management Team. PerformanceTrust.com is the website. Is that the best way to sort of anticipate this, Brian? Probably 75 basis points, but how are they going to put it?
All right, exactly. So the Federal Reserve meets. It's a two-day meeting. For Tuesday, they talk amongst each other, and then on Wednesday afternoon around 12, they announce their decision, and everyone's anticipating 75 basis points. But exactly right, this is what the market does, is watch the commentary. Are they going to say it's 75 basis points, and we hate the economy at 75 basis points, and we love the economy at 75 this time, but now we're going to take it easy? So it's all the commentary in the text of the release, and then there's a Q&A after. So the question and answer, you know, Jerome Powell is not an economist or a banker. He's a lawyer, so he's usually very, very careful with what he says. But it's the commentary and the text of the meeting minutes which really matters this time.
See, we've been to this movie before, and if I were him, there's nothing he can say that's going to instantly impact inflation, but he can instantly impact markets. So raise it 75 basis points. It is what it is. And then contextualize it in a way so as that markets respond favorably.
Right. So that is the thing, is they're trying to coach the markets into what they want. So the Federal Reserve has always had the ability to affect the economy just on influence. Hey, we think the economy's overheating a little bit, and the market will raise rates for them. You know, everybody's like, oh my gosh, there's a Fed rate coming. So, the commentary matters. What do they think about the economy? There's good news and bad news today, and depending on who you ask, the JOLTS survey came out, which is the job opening and labor turnover survey from the Bureau of Labor Statistics, and there were more jobs available than the market expected. So that's great news. But it's bad news because if there's more jobs available for people to go out and get, that means the Federal Reserve has to keep raising rates because what they're trying to do is slow the economy down and squeeze inflation out.
Well, I wonder what Jerome Powell would like to see happen then relative to his comments. Would he like to, as a result, see the markets to cool off, or would he like to say something that would see the indices go back up?
Yeah. So there it is. So the Federal Reserve, their job is to have full employment and have a stable value of the currency. That is their, they are not supposed to care what happens to the stock market. They're not supposed to care what happens to other things. Now, these guys live in the real world. These men and women that run the Federal Reserve are political animals. You know, they're appointed, so they're aware if the economy is getting better or worse. They're very aware that there's a midterm coming up here. You know, does that change their policy a lot? I don't know, but they're aware of it. So they are going to be, what they would love to see is for the economy to slowly slow down and for inflation to modulate, and then for them to be able to start lowering rates again.
Okay.
But how slow and when is the hard question.
But if the economy were to do what they wanted to do, slowly slow down, inflation come back down, how would markets respond to that? Would they go up?
So what would happen is the Federal Reserve would say, hey, the economy, what they're going to use terms like moderating or modulating, like, hey, the rate of slowdown is slowing down. So what we have to remember is the U.S. unemployment rate is like 3.6%. It's higher than in Illinois. We have a very high unemployment rate here. But that means there's a 96.4 employment rate. Right, we're at like full employment here in the U.S. So the economy's doing pretty well, and so there is suspicions, and nobody knows for sure, but there's suspicions the Fed's got a long way to go to slow the economy down. Are interest rates going to be 5, 6? Don't know. Nobody can predict the future. Anybody tells you where it's going to stop doesn't know. But what is interesting this time is we had 10 years where interest rates were almost zero. And the Fed might have overshot that a little bit. They kept rates too low for too long. And so this period of where they raise them might be longer than we expect.
Is there a scenario, this is the last question I'll ask about this, but is there a scenario tomorrow where, as a result of the number and the commentary, the markets go up?
Yes. So if the Federal Jerome Powell comes out tomorrow and says, we're going to raise 75 basis points this time, and we think the market's responding, we think the economy is responding, we probably don't think we're going to have to raise rates this fast, this much, the stock market would be off to the races.
And that would be 50 baby basis points in December. What is
yes.
the probability? Do you think that's a likely scenario?
I think it's improbable, just because we've just started raising rates, and rates are only at 4%. Just about every rate is 4%. But mortgage rates are 7. The beginning of this year, if you took out a 30-year mortgage, it was 3. Now it's 7. So these rates are starting to filter into the economy. I think it would be a little premature if the Federal Reserve started taking their foot off the brake, because the unemployment rate hasn't responded yet. We still are almost at full employment.
So you think it's 75 in December?
It's hard to make predictions, but I would like to answer that question after tomorrow. But yeah, I think they're going to probably do 75 next time too. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's a fair response. How can anybody know exactly what the market's going to do or how they are going to react? I'm interested too in that you pointed out that while the national unemployment rate is 3.6, I think Illinois is 4.5, and one economist this week said that somebody has to be on the bottom of a good list. So 4.5, you can say Illinois has the worst unemployment in the union, but most states would take 4.5. That's not a terrible unemployment rate.
It's a fantastic employment rate, right? So the inverse of that is the employment rate. So we've got a 95.5% employment rate. That's a fantastic setup. So economic statistics are dangerous. So as single data points, the question is Illinois unemployment rate going up or down? And is it going up and down quickly or slowly? That is the real question, is it getting better or worse? Not is it, what is it now?
Do you have a read on wages, Brian? What's happening in that regard?
So wages are going up. They're not boomeranging higher, though. So what will give employees leverage is a low unemployment rate and demand for employees. And so we're seeing it. You know, there are wages are increasing, but they're not going up 9 or 10%. You know, to get a 9 or a 10% rate, you have to go out and try and buy an I-bond to get a number that high.
Yeah. And the sort of disaffection of employees has really been the conundrum post-pandemic, right? We thought that when kids went back to school and mom and dad didn't have to stay home, people would come back to the office. And then we said, well, maybe it's something else. But for some reason, the ranks of employees just have not returned, have they?
Well, so there's the hard thing. You know, it used to be everybody went to work, you got on the train, you went in the office, you went home. So there are distortions in the data. So a lot of people are working from home. A lot of people are working maybe a couple of jobs. A lot of people are working remote. And there's also, which is it just occurred in the middle of this pandemic, like I said, a policy we never had before, we turn the economy off, is there are thousands and thousands, tens of thousands of people are turning 62 years old every day. The baby boomer demographic is going through the labor pool. And as those people leave the labor market statistics, I believe, are having trouble measuring those people, that they're leaving and that we're wondering where everybody is. And the answer might be they just stayed home. So there's you cannot underestimate the bulge of, as somebody referred to as well, as like a rat going through a snake. These baby boomers that were born after World War II are working their way through the economy. We had a boom time in the 70s and the 80s and the 90s, and that's starting to unwind as those people get a little bit older and start to consume less.
And so the market right now, notwithstanding, some of them just say, screw it, I don't have to go back, I won't. And
that's right. There's a fantastic point. There was an immense amount of wealth that was created in the 2000s, teens, and the beginning of the 20s here, just on stock market returns. So maybe if you're 60 and 90, you know, how rich you were in 1980 is different than how rich you are in 2020. So it might be a lot of people are just checking out and they're saying, I'm out.
Brian Battles, the advisor, Performance Trust Asset Management, performancetrust.com. is the website. Really interesting, Brian. Nice to talk to you today.
My pleasure, John. Thanks for having me on.
More business news on the Wintrust Business Lunch with Dave Schwann.
Start your timer. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing Chicago's business news of the day. Chicago-based True Value Corporation has acquired the brand trademark rights from Agway Farm and Home Supply. Agway is a leading wholesale product company. The acquisition expands True Value's move into the farm, ranch, auto, and pet category. It's True Value's second acquisition this year. Deere & Company in Moline, Illinois, will enter a partnership in Advantage Capital's Empower the Change Growth Fund. It provides entrepreneurs of color access to capital for business growth. Deere is allocating $500 million over the next 3 years to help disadvantaged business enterprises. U.S. job openings rose in September. Employers posted over 10.5 million job vacancies, up from 10.2 million in August. Economists had expected the number of job openings to drop below 10 million. That's your Wintrust Business Minute. I'm Dave Schwann.
Got the business of food for you now. Here's Steve Alexander.
Thank you. And a Green Bay woman has a story to tell about Aaron Rodgers. Right after I tell you that the business of food is sponsored by the Chevy Silverado HD. Experience life in HD. Visit ChevyDrivesChicago.com. Okay, the Aaron Rodgers story. One of the brightest stars in Green Bay right now does not play for the Packers, but she has been on the field at Lambeau. That was Frankie Moscato at the age of 11, standing before a packed house of cheeseheads at Lambeau Field.
Oh my gosh, that was probably the most nervous I've ever been. And Aaron Rodgers walking up to me and, you know, my biggest hero, he told me that I was cute.
And 6 years later, she was invited back.
What's so proudly we hailed.
The second time I returned, I remember he ended up finding me, and we got to chat a little bit, and I remember him telling me that I got a lot taller and just very complimentary of my singing, and it was just so cool to shake that million-dollar hand again.
Yeah, the reason Frankie's telling her story is that voting begins today to determine who will have the honor of singing the national anthem for the National Cattlemen's Beef Association Convention in February.
It really means a lot to me. I'm not a farmer, but that's where I came from. On my mom's side of the family, there's the Jones farmers who came to Wisconsin from Wales in 1857, and they were dairy farmers, but I'm told that they also had a significant beef cattle stock.
Frankie is one of four finalists. The others are from Alabama, Georgia, and Nebraska. Frankie's been on American Idol. She's a student at UW Green Bay, and she started a foundation to fight bullying and teen suicides.
Yeah, you can visit my website, frankie.me. There's no E in my name, just F-R-A-N-K-I. And you can click on the foundation tab right at the top.
And there's also a tab that'll take you to the voting page for the Beef Association's Anthem Contest. Voting ends November 15th. From the farm to your belly, today's National Calzone Day and National Vinegar Day. That's the Business of Food on 720 WGN.
Okay, Brown Friday's right around the corner. Here's Matt Lavery from UPS. Hi, Matt. Welcome to the show.
Hi, John. How are you?
Pretty good. The number's kind of astounding to me. UPS is looking to hire how many people?
We're looking to hire 60,000 people nationwide this coming Friday and Saturday.
Is this seasonal work? That is, I'm done in January. How long would these jobs last?
They'll run into January. But again, these are seasonal opportunities. But at UPS, we're a promote from within company. And I was a seasonal employee a little bit more than 25 years ago.
Yeah.
We rehired 35,000 seasonal employees last year into permanent positions. And roughly one-third of our entire workforce was a seasonal employee at one time. So we really look at it as an option for someone to come work for us seasonally, see what we're like as a company, and come back for a career.
What kind of jobs are you looking for?
In the Chicago market, we're still looking for sleeper team drivers out of our Hotchkins facility. We're also looking for seasonal drivers throughout Chicagoland. We're also looking for driver helpers. Those are the folks that are on the iconic brown package cars and help the driver deliver their routes. And we're also looking for package handlers who would help advance packages within our buildings throughout the Chicagoland market.
I see. So I would need a CDL if I was going to be a driver, but not if I had one of those other jobs?
You'd need a CDL for that sleeper team job. For the other ones, you would not. You would need, you can drive your own vehicle, or if you had a Class C license, you could drive one of our brown package cars.
How much do these jobs pay?
The seasonal jobs, the range is going to be between $16 and $30 an hour this peak season.
You said in the press release how to get hired in your area in just 25 minutes, no interview required. So it sounds like speed dating. And where would the jobs be? Would it be close to my home?
Well, you have 18 buildings in the Chicagoland market, so there's a lot to choose from. You would go to upsjobs.com. There's two things here you can do. First, you can look at events on upsjobs.com, and you could see there's going to be 450 nationwide events, in person or virtual, and you could pick one that fits your schedule. The other thing that you can do if you go to upsjobs.com, and you mentioned this a few moments ago, you can straight away apply for a job. 80% of our seasonal jobs do not require an interview, and you can have a job offer within 25 minutes of starting the process.
So do you recommend that I go to a physical job fair, or should I just go online?
It's really whatever your needs are. We're trying to be inclusive of all candidates. Some folks, they don't need the in-person instruction. They can just go online and go at it. Others, they want to touch and feel something, and they want someone to talk to.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why we're offering both options, and we're trying to meet all of our candidates' needs.
Your hiring events take place November 4th and 5th, Thursday and Friday, including more than 300 hiring events, as you said, across the country. So are these in-person events in the Chicago area at those locations? Where do I go?
If you go to upsjobs.com under events, you can sign up for an in-person event throughout the Chicagoland area. There's several.
upsjobs.com/events. Or
yep.
Does this work as well, upsjobs.com/Brown Friday?
Either one will work.
Okay. Good luck to everybody. Matt, I appreciate your time today.
Thank you, John.
Matt Lavery is the Director of Global Sourcing at UPS. That's this Thursday and Friday.